everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, and today we are continuing our series on the wonderful world of esports merchandise with Patrick Mahoney from We Are Nations. Patrick has been in and around the merchandising space for over the last 10, 15 years, I believe, building a full complement merchandise service for sports, music, and entertainment. As we discussed on the last episode with Hacks, rating the quality, variety, and availability of esports merchandise as a main revenue category is absolutely fundamental for esports to provide like a more stable base for all of this awesome gameplay and for world championships to be built on with the right organizations having the right support. So super excited to bring Patrick on. Patrick, thank you very much for the time.
Thanks for having me, Joe. It's cool to be here.
Awesome. So before we get started, it'd be great just to hear your story, your journey to where you are now, and also your history as a gamer.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first off, thank you for the compliment, but it's actually closer to 25 years.
Okay.
I've been in the business. I'm almost 50. So just hang that out there for a second. It will come in and out of my story as we talk over the next 40 minutes.
But, okay, cool.
I'll be 50 next year, but yeah, I mean, my background is really it's punk rock. Back in the late 80s when I was in high school, you know, I was playing in bands and booking my own shows and putting out my own. At the time, it was like 7 inches and even cassette tapes, and this came from a very DIY place. And you know, some of your listeners might remember like the early 90s when a bunch of bands started getting signed because of Nirvana, and my band was one of those bands. And I had my taste of sort of corporate rock, and then you know, it didn't work out, so I ended up getting a job at a merchandise company, a music merchandise company, and sort of slipped back into more of a DIY thing, and ever since then you know, we've, you know, been doing band merchandise and, like you said, some entertainment, some sports merchandising, and been doing that for years and years and years. And 2 or 3 years ago, my partner Chris Cornell and I discovered esports at an ESL event in Cologne, and I was just blown away by it. I mean, it was incredible. The production was incredible. You know, sold out. It was a Brazilian team and a Polish team in the finals, and you know, find out later that streaming all over the world. And, you know, it was sort of MC'd in English, and, you know, it was just amazing. You know, it was like going to a concert, you know, the sure. Production value was that high. And that got us thinking about where to take our business. And then actually what was even more sort of an aha moment for me was, you know, later that year, this is 2016, right? So that was July. And then in December of 2016, after we had started working with a few teams, started speaking to a few people, so more specific in the space, Chris and I again went out to an MLG event in Las Vegas. And honestly, that's what really blew me away, because, you know, Saturday and Sunday was the quarterfinals and the finals or whatever. And the sort of eight teams you expect to make the final bracket are the eight teams that make it, you know, maybe with one surprise. But it was the thing that I was really into was like the hundreds of teams that came in for the open bracket that by Friday afternoon were out, you know, and, you know, they seem to be from all over the place. They seem to be completely self-organized. And, you know, that to me was the punk rock of, you know, 2016. These kids are doing exactly what I was doing, you know, in the context of now, right? I mean, they're doing it themselves, putting their teams together themselves, running practices themselves, getting themselves to these tournaments, you know, producing their own jerseys, whatever sure. It takes to create these teams, they're doing it themselves. And that was a huge connection for me, despite my age, you know, and I was like, this is great. So that was really when we started to go full force. You know, we wanted to do something else besides music. So we formed Nations. You know, the first thing we did was we brought in a company called Hitpoint. It was last about almost a year ago. We bought them. They were Belgian-based, and that brought in a stable of teams and some sort of native knowledge. And we've been building ever since.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I know one or two people that joined the team over in the UK, Jack Kent being one of them. And yeah, it's been quite interesting to see the kind of angle that the you guys are taking. There's a variety of your pro wear or more lifestyle stuff, but it's all kind of got that minimalist style, which is what I really like. But we'll kind of dive into that in a little bit more detail later on. I kind of want to backtrack just 1 or 2 seconds, because your comments about the stage production being so similar to live music is absolutely spot on. You know, if you look at how sport is normally organized, the crowd is around the pitch, is around the ring, is around, you know, wherever the game's being played, and the esports is all set up at one side of the stage with more of a music feel to it. There's a lot more kind of a pomp and circumstance and lighting and smoke effects and that sort of thing, which is closer to a music gig than to a sports game. So one of the things I'm quite curious to see with the industry as a whole is how we can start to move towards the stadium approach or having that kind of amphitheater set up for future esports events. You kind of see that in the finals slightly with League of Legends at Worlds. I mean, they sold out that huge stadium in China, but more with CSGO, it's that 100% kind of one side of a wall, everyone around it piece. So that's quite interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was immediately familiar to us as well. And I think that, you know, esports, it's very authentic. I call it sort of owner operator. And what I mean by that is that the kids that are playing it sort of at the amateur level and the hobby level are also following the pros. You know, and when's the last time that you really saw that in sort of authentic countercultural thing? You saw that with skating and surfing, right? Where surfers were also, you know, they'd surf in the morning, sure, and then they go to the OP Pro in the afternoon. I lived in Huntington Beach for years and years. And it's really the same thing. So I think I would love to see that come together, as a bit more of a show, you know, as a bit more of a, like, as you said, pomp and circumstance. You know, Warped Tour is over this year. It's the last year. Is there going to be an esports tour? I bet you there will be. You know, can't really tell you exactly which bands that will sort of, you know, sure, identify with esports, but it's definitely going to happen. I'm already hearing rumbles about it.
Seen the tour. You know, the Houston Outlaws did a tour around Texas, meeting all of their fans in the various cities that they're affiliated with through the Overwatch League, and that was massively successful. So we're already starting to see that model being used, but not necessarily bringing all of these different genres together. Riot Games have tried to do something like that as well with League Fest on the West Coast, where they brought in some of the musicians that added some music into the game and that sort of thing. But there's a massive untapped market there.
You'll just, there's probably a disconnect between the agencies like CA and William Morris and et cetera, and, you know, the game side, whether it be the publishers or the leagues. That gap will close soon. You know, we could have this conversation in a year, and I bet you that it'll have changed.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's just the kind of speed of the industry at the moment.
And hopefully I'll be in the middle of that. Because that's our world, right? I mean, so we know that well. So
sure, that makes a lot of sense. Cool. So let's dial it back to Manhead for a second. I'm just kind of looking through the roster of artists that you've worked with. You've done some standout work with Fallout Boy, with Two Door Cinema Club, with Circle Waves, and a whole plethora of other names, be they kind of more recent or back through the last few years. That kind of experience building a unique brand for a small team of individuals must kind of lend a lot of experience to the esports industry. Where do you feel like the biggest lessons for you from that time have transferred over into esports, and kind of what's new, what's the challenge? You know, just summarize your experience kind of moving those ideas over from music into the esports industry.
Patience, to be honest. I mean, you know, the teams are a lot like the bands. You know, they're these sort of basically small to medium sized businesses that sort of by their definition are aren't corporate necessarily, or they're sort of straddling between the needs of their corporate sponsors and that sort of iconoclastic side of gaming. And so, you know, they're a lot like the bands, you know, and so we've had to be patient. You know, I mean, like on the music side, for years and years and years, it's just not uncommon to get a phone call from one of your big bands saying, by the way, we have a tour starting next week. Or you know what I mean? I mean, it's like sometimes last minute, sometimes you've got to sort of like, you know, create miracles to get things done for these people. I mean, we don't miss shows. If our bands are playing anywhere in the world, we're going to cover it. And that, you know, with it's, you know, it's like a dialect, you know, I mean, the esports side is just a little bit different, you know, the tournaments become the concerts, you know, e-commerce is e-commerce, and you've got to run it the same way with the way you merchandise your product and the way you run specials and the way you do sales and the way you engage around back to school or holiday or, you know, I don't know if it's Black Friday or Cyber Monday in this world yet, but you know, there's a play there, and it's just managing these teams to sort of take part in that sort of traditional way that you sort of sell merchandise around your brand, you know. So you know, that's the world we come from, and we've identified the sort of parallel tracks. Like I started to say that, you know, events were the concerts and e-commerce, and you know, we're every retailer that we deal with on the music side, you know, have come to us and said we'd love to do esports. We haven't pulled the trigger yet, because I see it more of a sport than like a Hot Market thing, where a lot of our music retailers like a Spencer Gifts or a Hot Topic tends to be more reactionary. I mean, we've got to find retailers that want to take the long view and bring in collections of teams as those collections actually gel, you know? So, but it's something that we're actively looking at. But it's really just, you know, turning around and offering that suite of services to our teams and knowing how to communicate with them, which is, you know, again, I know I'm repeating myself, but a lot like dealing with bands.
Sure.
So, you know, I there's a lot out there, you know, you've got to be nimble. You know, if you're going to deal with the teams, you got to be nimble. Sure, you can build this long-term program online or at retail or even our own brand. But at the end of the day, you know, when a team calls and says, we brought on a new player for a tournament next weekend in wherever, we need jerseys, you just got to get it done. So we do. And that comes from the music side. And we do it with a, you know, as goofy as it sounds, we do it with a smile, because we just know that's just the nature of the beast and the business.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. With you guys being in operation since the kind of back end of 2016, you kind of entered the market right at the time when there's been an exceptional amount of investment in esports. You know, whilst some of the experiences for some of the tournaments might look like it's just like a few kids actually putting together a team, you know, now there are huge business operations behind most of the top tier teams. I mean, like hundreds of people, including players. So the kind of support network that you get around the players, I think, is probably going to be a lot stronger now than it may have been in music. Maybe I'm completely wrong there, but I would assume that the kind of team behind a band would be smaller than, say, a multi-title gaming organization. So that kind of adds a little bit more pressure to you guys as well.
Yes and no. I mean, music's always sort of had its business side. We had lawyers and agents and sort of managers, and then you had the creative side where the you just had artists, you know, and yeah, I'd say that the teams that we deal with are, you know, you're right. I mean, they're scaled a little bit higher, but I've also found that, you know, a lot of the teams will basically assign merchandising in with, you know, one business group. So the communication channels and the sort of decision making process are still intact and fine and clear.
Sure.
So that's not been a problem. None of it's been a problem. I mean, we just know we have to react quickly because it's such a rapidly changing environment.
Sure. And for your experience, maybe let's dial it back for a second even more. In your own words, what would you summarize the We Are Nations brand as being? Because you guys are producing your own pieces as well that are kind of brand agnostic, but you're also working with the likes of Rogue, G2, and OG Red Bull as well. Where do you really position yourselves? Because you've got some of your competitors like Hacks going for that kind of blend of performance and lifestyle. You've got Third Label going for all lifestyle. Just quite curious to see, in your own words, what do you guys stand for, and you know, where's your niche in the market?
First, I'd like to say that I think the Hack stuff is great. I mean, they've got a really good design sensibility and collection. I think what differentiates us from them is that I'm really interested, going back to what we were talking about with MLG, you know, those kids that are coming in on the Thursday and Friday. Mm. I'm really interested in like a groundswell, a ground up approach to this, where, you know, nations in and of itself was a word that, you know, that we tossed around for a while, and we sort of backed into the realizing that it was a great metaphor for, you know, nations can be a group of people, or it can be, you know, an individual collection of people, you know, and to me, that sort of allows our customers to define where they fit in this ecosystem, you know, and so we, you know, obviously want to sell product, but You know, our marketing team now is really, really focusing as we start to roll this out, online only. You know, I mean, we're starting just with online. That we're using influencers, like, as opposed to sort of top down, you know, team sponsorships or things like that, because I really want to sort of be the brand for everyone, you know. And I just love that DIY peer to peer, you know, messaging that you can get. And it's those barriers of entry have been gone for years, right? I mean, between all the social platforms and the specific social platforms like Twitch even, and even the tools that exist to sort of aggregate all that, you know. It's just a great opportunity to sort of make something for the, you know, for this, yeah, I don't want to, you know, scene or just, you know, just the culture.
Sure.
You know, and that's where we're gonna go. So sort of there's an adage in apparel and fashion that's, you know, once you go downstairs, you can never go back up. So if you watch any sort of very authentic apparel line, and again, I like to use Surf and Skate because it's, you know, a place where I, you know, have touched for years and years is, you know, Volcom, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with. You know, they started with just giving out stickers in Huntington Beach or Costa Mesa, you know, and it wasn't, and it wasn't till over a course of time where you could actually find that stuff in a Tilly's or something like that, but still a different collection than what you find at the core surf shops, you know, and it's the adage. Once you go downstairs, you can never go up. So I, you know, we've got all the time that we need. This isn't going anywhere. I want to start with a really niche, cool, relatable brand, and we'll just grow it as the market needs it to. You know, we're not going to force it anywhere.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the kind of questions that's popped into my head as of you mentioning kind of the destruction of the barriers of entry to actually reach people is, in the digital world of 2018, when people have the luxury and the potential to really pick and choose aspects of their personality that they want to call their own. You know, you have access to any form of culture that you relate to. You know, I'm going to completely leave aside the hot button topic of cultural appropriation here, but does that make it easier or harder to actually build a unique apparel brand that actually says something? Because I would assume that going back to the music days, you know, you have these rock stars, you have these high profile guys, you know, there's actually less choice, less availability of choice. So I would say that those that are super fans will probably follow certain bands much more devoutly than they may these days, with like kind of Spotify kind of just making everything accessible. No one's kind of waiting for the big drops of an album. Most likely just go and stream it whenever they see a notification or a like from their friend on Instagram or Facebook.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I've already told you how old I am, so I can continue down that path. You know, when I was a kid, I got all my information from, and I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. So I got all my information from like Hit Parader and Cream and these sort of rock magazines that would come out every month. And then when I started going into the big city, I grew up in the suburbs. When I started going into the big city and started getting into punk, I got into the imports, and there was things from the UK like Melody Maker and New Music Express. But that's still how you got your, like you said, you got your information, and it was sort of like it was pushed to you on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. There was no internet. You know, I didn't even have cable and MTV until I was probably a senior in high school or whatever. You know, so you're right. And the result is that I'm still sort of scared of Aerosmith. Like the way they were built up in my mind when I was a kid, it was that like they were larger than life, you know, rock stars, like you said. And I think that's gone away, and I'm probably jaded, so I have to sort of self check this because I've been around the business for so long. But you're right. I mean, kids consume differently now, and everything's at their fingertips. And I do think they go and they look and they do explore. Like, you know, I've been down rabbit holes with my son who's 13. Like Spotify rabbit holes where he's willing to go for it, you know? But, you know, you're right. I mean, there's just so much choice. So how do you rise to the top? So my answer is I think that the challenge is breaking through and making the right kind of noise. And then it becomes a little bit easier because then you have all these tools at your fingertips.
You know?
So
please go on if I interrupted you.
Yeah. So again, the parallel for us is like that sort of alternative. You know, that DIY ethic where, you know, I think, you know, I, there's a I forget who wrote it, but there's that Blue Ocean Strategy book where like competitors, they go into the same water and they compete and it gets bloody. And then if you go into the blue side, you know, you got easier sailing because you're sort of doing it your own way. We're just going to try to find our own way and sort of get to the same point that everyone else wants to get to, but just sort of borrowing from, you know, DIY and punk and things like that, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, one of the jokes that we have is if you look at our team and you had mentioned Jack, you know, Jack's in his 20s. I think I'm allowed to say that, you know, all my marketing people are in their 20s, you know, and so a lot of the front facing decision makers, are young and come from esports where, you know, the sort of management side, and operations side, you know, myself and Chris are both roughly the same age and our COO, Alex, also from the UK, you know, he comes from traditional sports. I mean, you know, I've known him for years. I could never really fit him in on the music side, but, you know, I've known him since he was working with Wimbledon and he was an Olympics, London 2012 licensee. So that just, you know, all apparel, but traditional sports. So we just love that mix. I mean, quite frankly, you know, even if this doesn't go anywhere and we fail miserably, you know, it's been an amazing ride, you know, with this group of people. But we're not going to fail. Mark my words. What's today? Awesome. What's today? May 7th, right? May 7th, 2018. We're not going to fail. Says me today.
I'm sure that we'll all hold you to that as well. This all just reminds me of how, because I am massively into my music. My parents were super on the ball with kind of giving me a pretty strong education of kind of like the early days of punk and Joy Division and all of these bands.
Yeah, so, dude. I want to hang out with your parents.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. and when I was younger, you know, when I used to go and play sport and that sort of thing, there'd always be like a new album in the car. And that's how I learned about all the sorts of music that I like now. But now they're kind of more happy listening to what they like. And they listen to Six Music in the UK, which has some new stuff on there. And they kind of cherry pick the occasional song. But whenever I come home, I am the one that's on Spotify. I am the one that's like, because I know their tastes so well, I kind of like put together like a rolling playlist for the evening when we normally drink too much wine of songs that my mum will like, my dad will like, and also this kind of plethora of new music. But in reality, I have to go back through all these pre-organized playlists to even remember what these songs are called, because the moment I hear it come on, I know what it is, but the almost oversaturation of quality just means that through, like, I would never go and buy band merch these days because I have like a kind of more generalized sense of passion towards genres rather than specific bands. And this is always something new to kind of take your interest in another direction, which I think is like long-term ramifications wise to will everyone keep listening to the classics? I'm sure they will, but I think there's going to have to be a bit more of a kind of proactive process by the next generation of parents to make sure that amazing music isn't really left behind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're right. And it's an interesting story because, you know, I think everyone says this, but I'm not my parents, right? And sure. I think that, you know, I remember calling, you know, and even the stuff in small, like I used to call my friends' parents Mr. So-and-so, and you know, because there was that, you know, my son's friends call me Patrick, you know, and it's just totally natural. So I think, I, not to get too far off track, but I look forward to that. You know, and that's another part of me being involved in this. You had asked about my gaming experience. So, you know, admittedly, not what not like Jack, right? Or any of my younger, more gamer focused people. I mean, I had an Atari 2600 when I was a kid. You know, I'd be on tour and there'd always be the console of the time in the back lounge of the bus. And I remember playing through like a James Bond game one tour. And I remember obviously playing Call of Duty when it first came out, and my wife and I used to play the zombie game on like an early iteration of Xbox. But really, the gamer in my world is my son. And so, you know, talking about that connection with your parents, I mean, we're actually creating that connection now, where you know, I'll play a game with him, and he'll basically destroy me within an hour. Like, yeah, forget this. And I'm like, you know, he just goes on online. But I mean, it's his social circle, you know. And by the way, he's getting a certificate today, all straight A's this year in school. So that myth about gaming, you know, ruining your brain is not true, at least in the case of my kid. So
that's awesome, dude. So you're very proud.
Little plug up, little plug for my son.
Cool. Well, let's circle back on topic. Super happy for you that that news has come through there. That's awesome. We've seen some huge deals roll into the space with regards to sports apparel brands working with specific teams. Immortals and the K-Swiss performance shoe deal has had a massive impact on the esports business media. You've seen the Adidas FC Copenhagen / North deal. Now, that was more of a, like a local office activation that kind of rolled through a pre-existing deal with FC Copenhagen, so less of like a kind of global splashdown from Adidas taking esports seriously, and hopefully we'll see that soon. Do you feel like the influx of these absolute giants moving into the space is a potential threat to more endemic organizations like We Are Nations, Hacks, Add Third Label? Like, do you feel like there's a space for performance wear and lifestyle to kind of sit in the same wardrobe, but there must be potential risk there, you know, if you're looking to partner with the league or with the team, and then you've got just, you know, some absolute giant that is going to step in there and, without being negative, can just bring so much reputation and inventory and brand strength into them straight away. You know, is that a concern?
Not really, dude. I mean, I don't want to sound, arrogant, but it doesn't bother me at all. You know, because I look at, I'll give you two quick examples. One is completely relevant, and that's again Surf and Skate, where, you know, it's always been about going back a little bit, Billabong and Quicksilver, mid period sort of Hurley and Volcom, and then recently things like Brixton. You know, it's always been about these core authentic brands. You know, we know that Nike tried Nike SB, which really didn't do what they hoped it would do. And then to really get in, they had to buy Hurley, and that really didn't work out as well either. Yet the sort of core authentic brands continue on. And in fact, when they diversify, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't sometimes, like with Quicksilver and Rossignol and all the things that they started to do. You know, they got into trouble as well. You know, and I know that world well, and I believe that there is space for a couple strong, authentic core brands, and we're going to be one of them.
Awesome.
So the other example too, to back it up a little bit, and this is a little bit more anecdotal because I'm not a golfer, but you know, look at golf too. I mean, Nike golf and is big, of course, but so is Callaway still, and so is Ping. I mean, again, authentic brands that still have significant market share, and that, like skating and esports, is another sport where these participants are always watching the PGA Tour. So, you know, it's just more of a lifestyle sport. You know, and it happens in cycling and it happens in triathlon, things that I'm also involved in. You know, it's a smaller thing, but again, you get that participant, you know, authenticity and core. And so that's what we believe in. And so they don't bother me at all, you know, at all. You know, I wish every team that does a deal with them well, of course. You know, but you know, we're gonna go our way, you know, and sort of assume that there's gonna be a channel for us.
Sure, there 100% will be for these kind of niche brands, or these ones that speak to the core audience. One of the kind of markets that I will see be pinched by these entries is going to be the team jerseys themselves, because that is like one of the major selling tools out there realistically, despite the fact that the kind of evolution of partnerships is moving away from like a logo on a shirt or just a, like a boring piece of content. They're much wider and much more diversified. That's still the key piece of exposure that a team or a brand gets via competition. So super exciting to see how this aspect of esports is starting to grow. And yeah, just like every other conversation that I have around this, you know, this is where the game is being started to be played. You know, over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years is where we're really going to see the wheels start to spin even faster, and it's still super collaborative at the moment in terms of making esports the biggest and best that it can be. But I think those days are going to be quite sharply ending relatively soon, just because of all the need for a return on investment from all this investment that's actually rolling in.
Yep. I mean, you're going to have these heady days. You're going to have this sort of change, and then there'll probably be a bubble on the end of that. You know, it's just sort of a normal life cycle, right? And then things will sort of settle in.
Sure.
That's you know, but you've seen that, and we've seen that, you know, we've seen that movie before in other industries.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not super concerned that esports isn't going anywhere. All right, dude. Well, no, that's
it's going to stay for sure.
Sure,
absolutely.
So that's the kind of end of our standard questioning. Thank you so much for dropping your insight on the industry. Let's move into a little bit more of a rapid fire so that we can learn a little bit more about you. Who's your biggest mentor been in the space or in life, and kind of what was their best piece of advice that you received?
That's an awesome question. I read, you know, again, my age, but I read all the, Richard Branson books. I loved his rebellious spirit, but his ability to sort of create this sort of, you know, reputable group of companies. I mean, you know, that, you know, like were very much in the mainstream, you know, even though he's always been a little bit left to center as a business person. You know, there's been, you know, I've been, you know, been sort of blessed to work with some cool people in music. Some of the bands I've worked with, I'm a big fan of. You know, one of the first bands that I ever worked with really was Oasis, and just such a huge impact on my life, just soup to nuts. You know, and then one that I never forget is a guy named Jules Kurtz. He was an attorney. He was actually he's been around for a long time, and you know, he's dead now, RIP. But am I allowed to? He said to me one day, and I'll never forget this, and I don't even know what it means, but I've never forgot this. We were talking about small business, and he basically said, Patrick, if you're a minority owner in a small business, that's one step below whale poop at the bottom of the ocean. I'm like, dude, I don't even know what that means, but it's awesome, and I'm going to remember that forever.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, you know, like if you have the capital, if you have the ideas, or if you have the access, it makes sense to kind of be in the driving seat rather than kind of sit and watch you drive, you know.
Yeah, that wasn't very rapid. I'm sorry. I'll do better on the second one.
That's okay. Esports has no working hours. How do you maintain your sanity and keep a healthy lifestyle? I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say for this.
Well, I know what I'm good at. And I leave the rest to other people, and stop, you know, I stopped second guessing people a long time ago, because there are experts in fields that I'm not an expert in. And I also race my bike, which takes up a lot of my time. And in theory, anyway, is going to keep me alive longer.
Well, here's hoping, right? and the final one is, if you have a motto, what is it and what does it mean to you?
Do I have a motto? Fun follows me.
Okay. What does that mean to you?
We want to be serious, and you know, it's a manhead, part of the manhead culture, and it's also part of the We Are Nations culture too, is that, you know, when you come in and you work here or you work with us, we want you to enjoy it. You know, we're not going to be serious all the time. We're going to be loose. We're going to make jokes. We're going to try to have fun. But our output and the way we run our businesses, you know, we're very, very serious. So, you know, we're constantly striving to get that good mix of sort of internal control and oversight, but like a front end that's fun and enjoyable. And like, I want people to go, oh, those guys are cool to work with, you know, and that's what I want to be known for. You know, that we're fun.
Awesome. I love it. That's something that I hope to strive for in my day to day as well. All right, dude. Well, I think that's everything from me for this episode of the Esports Roundtable. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or how can everyone else reach out to you in the wonderful world of socials? Is it Twitter? Is it LinkedIn? What's best for you?
Just, I mean, for me, it's still email. You know, it's Patrick, my name, at wearenations.com. That's the email, and then we've got, you know, our social handles are easy to find as well, both, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, but to reach me directly, it's patrick@wearenations.com, and then the website, of course, is wearenations.com.
Awesome. Cool. Well, please do let me know when you've got some new releases on the way through, or any kind of big projects that you want to make some noise about, and we can have another chat. But thank you so much for your time, guys. That's going to do it for this episode of the Esports Roundtable podcast. If you want to reach out to us, it's at ES Roundtable Pod on Twitter or Esports Roundtable on Facebook. My Twitter is at Barely Qualified. Guys, we're going to have a whole bunch of awesome episodes for you over the next few weeks. We're really starting to dial in on some awesome guests, Patrick included. And yeah, we look forward to speaking to you soon. All right, guys. Peace.